This is Audible.
Audible Studios presents Another One. Written by Aletha Romegg. Performed by Ava Erickson and Brian Polino.
Prologue. Shayna. Can you believe I'm really married? Kimbra asks, leaning as close to me as she can with her long white wedding dress filling the space between us. I'm so happy for you. And I am. It seems like not that long ago we were roommates making our way through the big city of New York, the two of us against the world. If it can happen to me, I know your time is coming. I don't want to burst her romantic bubble, especially on her wedding day, but if my time is in the next decade, the way my love life is going, I'll need some divine intervention. First, I'm not dating anyone, which is usually a prerequisite for marriage. And second, I'm now daydreaming about the man across the dance floor talking with his date. Don't jump to conclusions. There's a lot more to that story. My current obsession, or attraction, is new, exciting, and absolutely crazy. It began last night with an innocent drink near a fire pit, a few wrong decisions that included shots of Fireball, and continued into this morning, waking in the bed of said man. No, I'm not into three-ways, and no, his date isn't real. It isn't like she's a blow-up doll either, but she's a pretend date. She's even engaged to his other friend. The reasons behind his charade are not complicated. My best friend's new husband is Trevor's brother, Duncan. Before meeting my best friend, Duncan's history with women was, well, legendary. For that reason of sibling rivalry, Trevor said he couldn't attend Duncan and Kimbra's wedding solo. Anyway, that's the story he told me and the one I want to believe. Let's concentrate on your big day, I say, and your big night. Kimbra laughs. I may be wearing white, but... She looks out to find her new husband across the room. I'm pretty sure that when it comes to tonight, I know all about what's coming. It'd better be you, I say just before we both start laughing, sounding more like teenagers than adults. When we both settle, I admit to my best friend. I may be a little jealous. Well, you can't have Duncan. I don't want Duncan, I just would like to... I know, she says excitedly, reaching beneath the long table and lifting a gift bag. You can have the gift from Grandma Helen. I giggle into my own glass of bubbly. In the bag she's holding is a brand new vibrator, color-coordinated to match Kimbra's wedding. I don't know if that's sweet or gross or both. I'm sure it would be the most action I've seen in ages, but still, I'll pass. As my best friend keeps talking, my mind goes back to this morning, waking in Trevor's bed, his broad chest and wide shoulders beside me, and the warmth of his body against mine. Yes, we'd slept together. No, we didn't do more. It's a long story, but the most important part is that we both agreed not to tell Kimbra or Duncan what happened. We agreed to keep it our one secret night. My lip disappears behind my teeth as I imagine Trevor shirtless, his morning beard covering his chin, and his hair all messed from sleeping. If you change your mind, Kimbra says with a grin, obviously misconstruing my concentration. I lift my hand to wave her train of thought away. It may be hard to believe that the vibrator in question came from Kimbra's grandmother, but it did. Yes, you heard that right. She's somewhere between 70 and 100 years old, and as Kimbra says, her filter is broken and the warranty is expired. That means that you never know exactly what will come out of her mouth. A few minutes ago, her grandma came parading to the head table and handed Kimbra and her husband, Duncan, a gift. I've heard stories of her doing the same to other family members. It seems that sometimes the gifts aren't wrapped. Thankfully, Kimbra's was in a gift bag. Even so, her grandma wanted the new couple to open it on the spot. The way Kimbra's cheeks filled with pink, I didn't have to ask what was inside. It was then that Grandma Helen promised Duncan an entire package of batteries for the honeymoon. Their conversation makes me smile. Besides, I don't think your new husband would approve. He sounded pretty excited about the entire package of batteries. Kimbra shakes her head. It's not like you don't have one. A husband? No, silly, we were roommates for years. Her brows waggle. As my grandma would say, you weren't brushing your teeth at midnight. How do you know? I happen to believe in diligent oral hygiene. When Kimbra looks at me with that all-knowing grin, I go on. Keep your gift. You're right, I have it covered. Yes, I have my own battery-operated boyfriend, but taking another glance into the crowd and seeing Trevor talking to his date, for the first time in a long time, I wish for the real-life kind of boyfriend. A few hours later, back at the hotel, I've officially declared defeat, losing the fight I was having with myself. I guess that also means I won. Maybe I should declare victory. No matter the conclusion, my internal debate is still raging. Don't do it. Then again, I'm almost there. At a little after midnight, instead of heading toward my own suite, I'm sneaking down the carpeted hotel hallway on my way to his suite. I'm not sure if that makes me curious, attracted, or pathetic. I don't want to overanalyze. All I know is that I'm attracted and, yes, curious. The jury is still out on pathetic. The way I see it, this is not 1960. A woman can initiate a conversation, especially with the man she woke beside, as well as a man. Why should I wait for him to make a move? Although my little pep talk is doing little to calm my erratically beating heart, I don't allow myself to stop moving toward my destination. Closer and closer with each step, I make my way to the suite of the man I can't get out of my head, the man whose deep voice and kisses woke me this morning. As I pass each door and the numbers grow closer to his, I'm contemplating my motive for this late-night walk. Why am I really doing this? It doesn't matter that I'm still wearing a long mint dress and crystal-studded high heels from the wedding, or that my hair is plastered in place by a full can of hairspray guaranteed to open a hole in the ozone, or at least cause me to be most certainly flammable. I don't even care that my makeup is so thick that I could possibly get a gig at the local gentlemen's club. All I can think about are the stunning green eyes that seemed omnipresent during Kimbra's wedding. Or how at the reception, each time I'd turn, our gazes would meet, and my pulse would race. I wanted to go to him, to talk, to dance. But as the maid of honor, my role was beside my best friend. As the brother of the groom, his place was with his family. Now our designated roles are complete. My best friend and her husband are off somewhere, and I don't even want to give them or her grandma's gift more thought. So what do I want to find when I reach Trevor's room? I don't know. That isn't true. I know. I want to find Trevor Willis alone. I want to confirm that Cynthia, his date at the wedding, is, as he said, a friend. A friend with a fiancé of her own. A friend whose fiancé is also Trevor's friend. A friend who helped him by being his pretend date and nothing more. I want to confirm what my heart thinks it knows. To verify that the handsome, sexy, and honorable man I met last night is sincere and honest. I want to know that just because his last name is Willis doesn't mean he has kept par with his brother's reputation, per the rumors associated with Duncan before he began dating my best friend. It wasn't so much that they began dating as they began pretending. With each step closer to Trevor's suite, I hope that maybe, just maybe, tonight at the wedding of my best friend to his brother, we did the opposite of pretending to be together. If there's a chance for anything more to materialize between Trevor and me, then maybe one day we can say it all began when we pretended not to be interested in one another at a wedding. The idea makes my insides flutter as anticipation builds. I want that. I want this wedding weekend to be the beginning of a relationship with a future. A relationship. My mind tells me that a future is impossible. After all, I live in London and he's working in Washington State. That scenario doesn't sound like the best setup for any kind of future, but after what happened last night, I want to try. My heart wants what it wants. Mind be damned. As I turn the corner toward Trevor's room, he steps into the hallway, his suit from earlier replaced by chic casual attire. I'm stilled by the sight of him in nicely fitted jeans and a soft t-shirt. The cotton pulls tightly around his bulging biceps and wide shoulders while hanging looser at his waist. I bite my lip as I watch him. Closing the door, Trevor turns my way. The other doors lining the hallway disappear as our gazes meet. Just like during the wedding, my pulse kicks up as my heart thumps loudly in my ears.
Shayna?
Chapter 1. Nearly a year later. Shayna. There are so many boobs, everywhere, Chantilly says with a shake of her head. She's right. We're in the middle of chaos, which, if you don't know, is filled with tall, beautiful women with high heels and perfect breasts, better known as the fashion show dressing room. Tomorrow, all the models will have their makeup done and hairstyled. Today, they're simply here to make the last adjustments to the lingerie and final prep on the Saks Fifth Avenue semi-annual lingerie fashion show. You may not think of lingerie as complicated. I mean, it's something we wear under our clothes or to sleep. Not here. Not tomorrow with these models' bodies highlighting the latest in Saks intimate apparel. Not with my promotion on the line. Today is the final rehearsal, the last chance to make this lingerie fashion show the best it can possibly be. So many, she whispers again. And our job is to be sure they're covered when they walk on stage. We both eye the model wearing only a black lace thong and matching bra that barely contains her C cups. The padded half moons of material push her boobs upward with the upper edge of her areola visible. My gaze narrows and lips purse as I turn back to Chantilly and fight back a smile with a shake of my head. It's the same battle we've been fighting for the past week. Chantilly lifts a tube that resembles something like a bottle of roll-on deodorant, or better yet, a glue stick from preschool. In reality, that's what it is. Glue. Body glue. By the time these models walk on stage, their lingerie will be attached like a second skin. No wardrobe malfunctions, we say in unison. Shayna! Shayna! I'm turning and twisting in a million different directions as models and dressing assistants call my name with questions or simply look for my nod of approval. That's who I am, the number one point on Saks Fifth Avenue's semi-annual New York lingerie fashion show. It's one of the top shows for the company in terms of attendance. Not only will there be buyers from all over the world, but the show is also open to the public. That means interested parties from everywhere will be in attendance, possible buyers and investors, as well as the competition and, of course, just the curious attendee. That isn't my choice. I like keeping shows professional, however, the added attendance is said to ramp up the excitement. According to Chantilly, who has been backstage for the last three shows, the enthusiasm radiates from the audience to the models. As I fan myself with my clipboard, I wonder if we can handle more radiation. The temperature in the dressing room already feels like 100 degrees, and we still have hours of planning and refining. Maybe the higher temperature is beneficial for the models. Since I'm not walking around in a bra and panties, my extra clothes may be part of the problem. No doubt that their lack of clothes could be an issue if they were cold. Then again, too hot and body glue begins to melt. No one wants that. Which one with the chemise? Chantilly asks from across the room. Thong or tanga brief? I eye the two swatches of white satin material she's holding in the air, neither looking as if they'll cover enough of the beautiful 6-foot-tall model by her side to make a difference. However, with the way the white silk chemise hits the top of the model's thighs, unless this fashion show wants to be renamed a striptease, one is definitely going to be necessary. Yes, more than breasts are on display behind closed doors. Tanga brief, but in black. Chantilly's eyes narrow before her lips move upward.
I like that. Yes, through the white silk it will pop.
Models in all stages of dress and undress talk amongst themselves, moving about the crowded dressing room as they wait for their final assignment. I'm twisted in different directions with questions as I work to pin a too long spaghetti strap onto the lace bodysuit. Shayna. I turn my gaze as I poke the straight pin through the strap and into my finger. Ow! The model in my grips murmurs with a flinch. Sorry, I reply as my lip disappears behind my teeth and I assess the damage. I may have superficially nicked her, but damn, I practically stabbed my finger.
Let me help, Chantilly says as she comes toward us. I think you should stick to the clipboard and let the wardrobe assistants handle the sharp objects.
I lift my hands in defense, only a small dribble of blood visible.
You're probably right. She's all yours.
Yes, I also find it hilarious that the lead coordinator of a lingerie show is named after lace.
Brocade, guipure, knit, or a lawnsoon. I suppose it could be worse.
Jeunesse, Chantilly says, reaching for my hand and assessing the damage, needs your help with the French briefs.
Her eyes meet mine as she tilts her head toward the entrance.
Band-aids are in the cabinet by the door.
Did you know that Band-aid isn't a universal term? I didn't know that until I was in London working. There, they're called fabric strips or plasters. Simple things like that make me happy to be back in the States. Nodding, I forget about the language idiosyncrasies and recall Chantilly's first statement.
Jeunesse needs my help with a pair of panties? I ask, wondering what happened to miniskirts and low-lace tank tops from the junior line.
I know what happened. 2 weeks ago, while working in London, I received the call, the one offering me a chance to advance from juniors to ladies' lingerie. It is more than I ever dared to dream. And yet, in the middle of this pandemonium that by tomorrow needs to be a finely tuned tranquility, I'm questioning my sanity as much as my ability. Grabbing a fabric strip, which isn't even the Band-Aid brand, from the small cart near the door, I make my way through the sea of satin and lace until I find Jeunesse. As one of Saks' top models, she's stunning, and at least 10 inches taller than me, and that's without the 5-inch heel she's currently wearing.
See right here?
Jeunesse says with a frown as she points to the top hem of the French briefs.
Yes. Maybe I should wear something else.
Why?
I shake my head. Maybe I'm not seeing what you're seeing. The way it makes my skin bunch, it will be all anyone sees.
Her tone and the way her words are clipped by her accent create a mix of irritation and disappointment.
Jeunesse, your skin isn't bunching.
Hell no. I don't think this woman standing nearly a foot over me has skin to bunch. If anything, I'd like to feed her a sandwich.
She sighs. I don't know.
They fit perfectly. I look up to my eye level and quickly move my head back. The black lace front of the bustier stretched across her breasts is sheer enough to be transparent, leaving 2 very large round boobs inches in front of me.
Chantilly was right. They're everywhere.
I take a step back as I return my gaze to Jeunesse's big blue eyes.
I don't think anyone will notice the briefs.
Jeunesse smiles. It's then that I notice the edge of the bustier is precariously close to her nipple.
As a matter of fact, I speak louder, can someone be sure we have a little body glue on here?
They're not easy to contain, Jeunesse quips with a grin.
Then maybe a lot of glue? Let's try our best to keep them covered today and tomorrow.
She gives me a wink as she walks over to one of the assistants already armed with the roll-on bottle.
Ladies, final number in 10, I say loudly, garnering everyone's attention. I'm going out to talk to the sound guys. Does anyone have any questions?
Every model's gaze stares my way, all wondering the same thing. Will I be able to pull this off? It's the million-dollar question.
We've got it in here, Chantilly assures me with a smile. Grab a Band-Aid on the way out.
I already have one, I say, wiggling my wounded middle finger in the air. As soon as I do, I realize my unintended gesture.
Hey!
Her smile grows. Quickly, I wiggle all 5 fingers, waving as I step out of the room. Opening the door to the stage, I'm met with a rush of cool air and, at the same time, the heat of stage lights. It's a strange combination causing goosebumps and perspiration to materialize simultaneously.
wiping my brow while shivering. I'm now thinking about each possible piece of lingerie and how these lights and cool air will accentuate the model's attributes that won't be hidden with glue. I make a mental note. Nipple tape. Skin-colored, it stops the pebbling of nipples. Okay, it doesn't stop it. The tape hides it. Nipples harden. It happens. However, it's not always produced by endorphins, as books make it out to be. A simple cold chill can change the way the lingerie hangs, and, like in the books, certain buyers can be all too easily distracted. Steven, I call out into the lights, remind me to check on nipple tape. Since I can't see anything past the stage, I hope that I didn't just yell nipple tape to a room full of buyers. I squint into the sea of light. If I were a model, I think I'd appreciate the blinding fog. I can imagine that no one is out in the audience, that I'm alone on the runway. After only a few seconds, the first few rows of seats become visible. Moving forward, my flat ballet slippers slip on the smooth surface, causing me to rear backward, nearly falling on my behind and losing my clipboard. A few windmill moves with my arms, and I'm steady to go.
Grace personified.
My assistant laughs, his deep voice cutting through the light-induced fog until I see him moving toward the edge of the runway. I can't help but laugh, too. Hey, I didn't fall.
Lucky that quick move didn't land you on your nose, or better yet, cause you to take flight.
Fine, that's why I'm not a model.
Yes, the only reason.
Shut up, I quip, and offer me a hand to help me down.
I'm not sure that's in my job description.
Steven says, stepping forward and giving me a steady hand, just as he's done ever since we met in London. Nearly 2 years ago, I was transferred from New York to London and named as head of the junior clothing line of Saks Fifth Avenue. With that move, I acquired Steven. As with Chantilly's help backstage, a great assistant can make or break a career. When I was offered the possible opportunity to move back to New York, to move up from juniors into lingerie, I made one request. I asked for Steven to mirror my move. Of course, I asked him first, and even though this is a trial run, he said yes. Thankfully, so did the powers that be. Steven is more than an assistant. Over the last 2 years, he's become one of my best friends. Yes, you can have more than one.
What was that about nipple tape? He asks with a cheesy grin. Max ran a marathon once and had tape to avoid bleeding nipples.
Ew, I say. The image he's describing not what I need in my head right now. Not with the memories of my injured finger.
Yeah. But unless you've changed up the numbers or speed of the show, like the models are now going to run the runway, I don't see that being an issue here.
Chapter 2. Shayna. My nose scrunches at the thought of men I've seen running the New York Marathon and the image of blood-stained shirts. Apparently, nipples aren't only a woman's problem. Shaking the unwanted images away, I say, No, no blood, yuck. The tape is for this cold air. We don't want the models to look cold, if you know what I mean. Steven shakes his head.
Sometimes I question my life. You know, when I woke up this morning, I never thought, I hope that sometime today I'll have the opportunity to talk about nipple tape.
You didn't?
Did you?
Well, it's more like when I wake, I wonder what crazy-ass stuff is going to be thrown my way. I'd say I'd rather avoid subjects like nipple tape, body glue, and boobs, but that would mean I don't love this. I wave my arms around. All of it. And you know what? My best friend's smile broadens, lifting his cheeks and making the little creases appear by his eyes.
You love every minute of it.
I do. Nipple tape and all.
Speaking of nipples and boobs and this,
he mimics my Vanna White gesture showcasing the room.
How's the madhouse backstage?
Certifiable. Chaos at its finest. A second ago, I was telling someone to glue lace on boobs. There are so many boobs. Steven laughs.
Boobs are good. Nipples bleeding or showing, not so much.
One more scrunch of my nose. Not to the buyers and definitely not to the designers.
No wardrobe malfunctions, we say together, repeating what seems to be my current mantra. Honey, that's for sure, he says. You don't need anyone going Janet Jackson on you.
I rub my hands over my arms, the air conditioning roaring from somewhere above. Why is it so damn cold out here? We're showing lingerie and not parkas.
Tomorrow, this place will be packed to the gills with shoulder-to-shoulder people and filled with bright lights.
He points to the rafters where the rays of light shine at intervals. I squint as I follow with my eyes.
Currently, he says, only about half of the lights are on. When they're all shining, even without the people, it'll raise the temperature by at least 15 degrees to at least 75.
Fahrenheit, I hope. He laughs. Different systems of measuring temperature were part of our adjustment to living in London. When an American hears the temperature will be 38, he or she thinks cold. It doesn't take long to learn that assumption is wrong.
Better be, he says. If it's Celsius, we'll be broiling the models, not showcasing them.
I still think the tape is a good idea. My whole body shivers as we make our way to the light and sound booth. Tell me you have everything set out here.
Stephen's head bobs on his broad shoulders.
Have I ever told you how much I appreciate your confidence and decisiveness?
No, Ms. Price, you have not. Maybe you have. I'm really not sure.
Sarcasm dripping from his friendly tone is why I've grown to love him. He can invoke humor in a way that takes off the edge, while still being ever so competent in his job. If I had to narrow it down, I'd say that Stephen's ability to make me smile in the face of a challenge is why we work so well together. For 2 years, he's been my right hand. Heck, he's been my right arm and probably the right side of my brain. He's very creative, yet also extremely well-organized. Maybe he's my entire brain?
So, he begins changing the subject. I'm finally going to meet my new bestie.
I playfully punch his arm. You can't have her. She's mine.
Well, you're mine and she's yours, and I'm yours, so technically...
Despite all the worries about the lingerie show, thinking about my two best friends finally meeting makes me grin. When I was first transferred to London and overwhelmed with everything from the cute red phone booths and double-decker buses to learning how to navigate the tube, Stephen was right there beside me. Being also from the States, he was born and raised in New York, he's been there for me. I've been there for him. Together, for the last 2 years, we've seen life's and love's ups and downs. Recently, he ended his relationship with Max. Not as in Maxine, but as in Maximilian, a sexy investment banker with a to-die-for British accent and posh flat. 2 months ago, I would have said Stephen and Max were perfect for one another. That was before Max did him wrong. Now, Max is pond scum. That's what friends do. We adore those you adore, and abhor those you abhor. From, oh honey, he's perfect, to, I never liked the guy. Have another glass of wine. Pond scum is too good for the likes of Maximilian Cantel. He's lower than pond scum. That makes him fungi buried in the muck below the surface, the kind clinging to rubbish for survival. Yes, the man beside me, my best friend and personal assistant, is a male fashion designer who happens to be interested in other men. It sounds cliche, but he's not. He's a whiz at fashion, knowing, predicting, and wearing. He has the looks and personality that draws both women and men. Though he's always been open about his orientation, the female models and juniors were always hanging on his every word. He's definitely handsome, charismatic, and fun. He's also nice and considerate and incredibly efficient. With everything we've experienced, I think of him as the brother I never had. While he didn't need to make the attempt at this transition with me, I'm so glad that he did. Now we're back in the States, in Manhattan to be exact, the home of my other best friend, Kimbra. I can't wait to see her again. While I've been off in London, she's been working her dream job and living the life of a newlywed with her sexy husband, who also happens to be her boss. That's another story for another time. Up until just recently, Kimbra and I haven't been able to make our schedules mesh.
Even though Stephen and I have been in the city for over a week, our every waking moment and some of our sleeping ones have been dominated by this fashion show. Tomorrow it will be over, and tomorrow night the three of us are finally going to get together. Drinks tomorrow night at the Martini Club, I say. She invited us to her place, but with the crazy schedule we've been keeping, I was afraid we'd be late or have to cancel. The club is in Lower Manhattan and not too far from our hotel. I'm really concerned I may fall asleep. Burning the candle at both ends doesn't even begin to describe my current state. Tomorrow, with the show as history, I figured we could relax. Besides, celebrating is better than crying. I'm excited for you to meet her. Just remember, my volume lowers as my eyes widen. Stephen waggles his brows. Just remember to fill in the infamous Kimbra on your little romp with her brother-in-law. I punch his arm again. If you say one word, he presses his lips together. You can be so violent. Sealed, my lips are sealed. I'm not violent, and it's also not that I want to be dishonest with her. This was a hard secret to keep. But I didn't tell her when it happened, and now... Well, now it doesn't matter. Water under the bridge. As you may have guessed, we're talking about my disastrous love life. Disaster isn't the right word. Disaster, by definition, implies a one-time catastrophic event with unimaginable consequences. My love life is more like a cataclysmic, prolonged weather phenomenon, better known as the century-long drought. Similar to both of my best friends, I like men. I like men a lot. I've dated some. I've even dated boys if you want to go back to my youth. But when it comes to long-term, my relationship with Stephen is the longest one I've had with anyone with a penis. Not that I've seen Stephen's, or want to, but you understand. And a romp, as Stephen called it, isn't exactly an accurate account. However, when it comes to describing this man from my past as Kimbra's brother-in-law, that is 100% on point. Thus, the reason for secrecy. Whatever Trevor and I had happened innocently enough. On the morning of Kimbra's wedding, I happened to wake in the bed of a handsome, sexy gentleman who later that day became her brother-in-law. It's a long story, but the reality is that it was simply that. One secret night. Even the next night, as we grew more familiar, we didn't take it further. The timing wasn't right. I was headed back to London and he back to the state of Washington, where he was overseeing an engineering project. If romp implies sex, we didn't romp. We had attraction, off-the-chart sparks, enough to ignite a forest fire with a sight of some teenage making out, without the teenage clumsiness. But that was all. You could say that the lack of sex is another element to the drought I mentioned. Seriously, if things don't look up, my vagina may dry up and blow away. After that secret one, we spoke a few times on the phone, off and on for a few months. While absence may make the heart grow fonder, distance sucks big, hairy balls. Living on two different continents, separated by thousands of miles, does little for a future. The spark didn't die as much as it was suffocated by the Atlantic Ocean. While Trevor and I haven't spoken in months, now that I'm back in New York, I haven't been able to get him out of my mind. I imagine seeing his green eyes in a crowded restaurant, or his wide shoulders in a packed elevator. I remember his dark blonde hair that never seemed to stay in place, beckoning my fingers to comb through the soft tresses. I recall how protective he was, and how we would talk for hours. Nevertheless, any hope for a future with him is simply my overactive imagination. Life has a way of interrupting dreams and even messing with our imagination. We both chose our careers. The last time we spoke, he was still working on a project on the other side of the country. Granted, that was a while ago, but still, Trevor Willis is water under the bridge. That's what I keep reminding myself. And now I'm here, back in New York, with a great opportunity to further my career. Not talking about that secret one helps to nullify its significance. Since only Stephen has heard my sad tale, I don't need to discuss it with anyone else.
That way I can keep Trevor in the safe recesses of my memory, only to take him out when my mind slips to what could have been. When Stephen meets my other best friend, Kimbra, he's forbidden from saying, "So I hear you have one sexy-as-hell brother-in-law," after introducing himself. Life could be different if I were back here for good. However, there's no guarantee we'll be moving back to New York. Our promotion to Ladies Lingerie is contingent upon the success of this fashion show and the work that follows. As it stands now, we're simply in the city for a trial run. All at once, as Stephen and I enter the sound booth, the subject of our conversation changes. No more entertaining the memories of the one sexy man from my past. As the booth door closes and I'm faced with the empty stage, an array of lights and plethora of buttons and switches, I'm back to work, no longer a lovesick woman, but the possible new budding director of Ladies Lingerie at Saks Fifth Avenue. Mentally pushing Trevor aside, my mind is now consumed with beautiful women, sexy lingerie, and pulling off the best runway show this city has ever seen. Chapter 3. Shayna.
"No, no," I say to Chantilly as I stare into her eyes. "Tell me this isn't happening."
"Shayna, if I could, I would. Janessa is sick. Food poisoning, she thinks."
"Food? She doesn't eat."
"You know, if she could be here, she would. It hit her hard last night. She tried to push through, and early this morning she ended up in the ER.
"No, she's our top model. Everyone is expecting her, especially in the finale."
I take a deep breath.
"We have an hour to showtime. What are we going to do?"
"You could take her place."
I look at Chantilly as if she suddenly grew another head. Of all the possible solutions, this is quite possibly the furthest from my mind. To be honest, it wasn't even a consideration.
"What?
That's the most absurd thing I've heard in my life. I'm obviously not a model."
"It's not that obvious. No, you have never done it, but you know the routine."
When I don't respond, Chantilly goes on.
"Shayna, you're a beautiful woman. The only thing stopping you from modeling is you."
"And my height, body, and, oh yes, inability to walk a straight line in flats, much less heels."
She looks me up and down. "Okay, you're not as tall, but let's face the reality. It's too late to get a backup here and teach her the routine. That leaves you and Stephen, who know every step for every model. Even I don't. My job is backstage."
I take a deep breath, afraid to listen to her reasoning.
"Shayna, you can do this. Besides, think about it. Stephen won't fit into the lingerie."
I close my eyes, hoping that if I wish hard enough, Janessa will magically appear.
"The doors are open and people are coming in," Stephen says through an earpiece. "The show, as you two have made it, isn't like it was when it first came to us," Chantilly goes on. "The changes are great, but no one else knows them, not like you do."
My head moves back and forth.
"You do?"
I look her up and down. Chantilly is a pretty brunette with chocolate skin and big blue eyes. She's about my height, and as I take a closer look at her figure, I notice she has a shape that would easily be flattering in lingerie.
"You say you were backstage, but you know everyone's place." "Shayna, I want this for you, I do. Putting me in heels out there is a mistake."
"What if we do some last-minute adjustments?" I ask, grasping at straws. "We can move Shelly to lead." Chantilly nods.
"That'll work. She's the tallest. Still, the finale will be minus one featured outfit. The finale is where the buyers take their last looks at their favorites. If you move Shelly to Janessa's outfit, the long negligee that Shelly is wearing won't make the finale."
I know that the designers pay a premium fee for placement in the show. Excluding even one piece from the finale will have far-reaching repercussions, ones that won't facilitate my promotion. I look down. "Chantilly, I'm too short to wear Shelly's long negligee." She looks down at her iPad.
"We have a petite in the back. It's white instead of the black Shelly is wearing, but in reality, that's a plus to show any style in two different colors. The designer is only paying for one."
My heart is thundering in my chest. This is a mistake. "Think,"
I say, clasping my hands together. Give me anyone else, please, another option.
We have other models.
Chantilly lays her hand on my shoulder.
Even if one of them could be here in time for the show, she won't know the routine. I can get someone here for the individual runway, but not the finale.
So no matter what, we need me to do the finale. The words come out flat as my mouth grows drier by the second, and my stomach does its own gymnastic routine.
We do. Shelley can do both outfits during the runway. It saves us from calling in someone new. Then the only time you need to go out is the finale.
I process the show in my head. During the finale, each piece is reintroduced. The model makes one trip down the runway and back to a spot until the entire staple is on stage. And then it happens. The finale extravaganza. An intricate weave of models passing around one another, turning, repositioning as a team until one by one they exit. It gives each piece of fashion the same exact amount of time on stage to be seen. Why didn't I go with the simpler choreography? I changed the show to demonstrate that I could. I changed it to make the show special, to make it mine. Last night, our final run-through was perfect. We stayed an hour later than scheduled. The models were exhausted, but the result was as stunning as a Broadway number. As my eyes closed on my pillow last night, I experienced a rare sense of accomplishment. And now that feeling is replaced with butterflies the size of dragons. Judging by the burning in my chest, the dragons are spitting fire. Let me think for a minute, I say, shaking my head as I lift the mouthpiece on my shoulder to my lips. Stephen, I need you. His reassuring voice materializes into my earpiece.
I don't think you want me backstage.
I do, in a white lace-trimmed silk negligee.
Talk to me.
Tears burn the back of my eyes. Meet me in the sound booth.
You can do it, Stephen says. Let them shorten the hem so you're not wearing stilts. When they're all positioned, the outfit you'll wear is off to the side. Everyone will be looking at Shelley at center. You know this routine. You taught it to them.
My best friend blurs as the tears threaten to spill over my lids. Stephen, his arm comes around my shoulders.
Stop it. You're our leader. Chantilly's idea is a good one. There isn't time to reteach.
Maybe you're right and that negligee is off to the side in the routine, but I'll still need to make one trip all the way down the runway and then manage not to knock out any other models during the last part.
Boss lady,
he says, his voice lowering to his reassuring timbre.
I never told you this before because, well, it's not my style. But you're beautiful. The first time I met you, I thought HR had sent me to the wrong person. I assumed you were a model. Tell me you never considered modeling.
I've never considered modeling. Stephen's head shakes. Okay, maybe as a young girl, but I loved the fashions too much to simply wear them. I lowered my eyes, and the idea of everyone looking at me scares me. Stephen lifts my chin.
Think about our junior models for a moment.
I do, even though they model teenage clothes. Most are adults in petite bodies.
What about Becky?
He asks. What about her?
What does she do when she isn't modeling?
The tips of my lips move upward. She mostly studies. I think at last count, she's only a few credits away from finishing her master's degree in finance.
You went straight to the creative duties in fashion because you're smart. You've moved up in this company because you're quick on your feet and a problem solver. Those women back there are modeling because they are beautiful, and yet they also have other dreams and goals. You're doing yours in reverse.
If I do this, he cuts me off before I can finish as he emphasizes his first word.
When you do this, you will overcome any fear you ever had about modeling. Not only that, but you'll be in a better place to do what you do because you will know what it's like to be out there. You will have experience. You will have conquered.
If I fall on my face, we're headed back to London. You know that, right? Stephen loosens his embrace, moving both hands to my shoulders.
Something came up last night, and I put a deposit on an apartment.
My mind isn't functioning fast enough.
You did what?
When you kill this show, they're going to see how amazing you are. We'll be moving back here, and I need a place to live. Would I have done that if I had doubts? My entire body begins to shake. I don't know why you would do that. This, I flail my arms about, isn't set.
It is. Chantilly and I have your back. You said last night that you couldn't see anyone from the stage. Just imagine the only person out there is the one person you want to see you in a silk negligee.
My lungs try to fill with air. The one person?
It's me, isn't it?
Stephen asks with a sheepish grin. It's so not you.
There, you're smiling. When you walk out, imagine that one person is the only one in the audience. It's just the two of you, and you're walking to him. Only him.
My nerves begin to calm as I imagine the green eyes I've been thinking about since our airplane landed on U.S. soil. I look up to Stephen. I really hate you. He kisses the top of my head.
You love me. You, Shayna Price, can do this. A leader, a problem solver, delegates when possible, and takes control when needed. We need you. You can do it.
35 minutes,
comes from Mike at the sound panel.
Go, Stephen says. I've got this out here. You need to talk to Chantilly, and Shelley needs to know what's happening.
I narrow my gaze. You really put down a deposit on an apartment in Manhattan?
Would I lie to my best friend?
In a heartbeat.
East Village. It was too good of a deal to miss.
I close my eyes and bring up the image from my past. I envision the one person I'd like to have look at me in a negligee. The one man I've imagined since our secret night. I recall his gaze when I woke in his arms. His playful smile as he helped me remember what Fireball had tried to erase, in the way we kissed the last time we saw one another. Shit, I mutter to myself as I make my way backstage. I'm going to need nipple tape if my thoughts go there.
Shayna?
I turn to see my possible new boss.
Vicky!
Her expression is more enthusiastic than her voice.
I heard about Janaz. I can't believe she isn't here.
Things happen, I say with more confidence than I possess. We will still make this work.
I don't need to tell you that there's a lot riding on this show.
You don't.
And the designers paid for their spots.
But not for the models wearing them. Every outfit will be spotlighted. The show must go on. She takes a step back and nods.
Grace Under Pressure is an asset we can use in lingerie.
I'm going to be backstage, but we can talk after the show. I say.
Count on it.
Chapter 4. Trevor. Eric laughs as he settles against the cool vinyl of the booth and listens to his future. You guys can't be serious. This sounds like The Hangover meets Impractical Jokers. This is my bachelor party weekend. I was thinking bars and nightclubs. Last night was a good start. He shakes his head. I wasn't thinking of crashing a fashion show. A lingerie fashion show. He says the last part staccato, like it will change Max's mind. Deadly serious, our friend Max says. I didn't travel across the pond to sit casually at some gentleman's club. The fashion show is perfect. There'll be beautiful women for you blokes and some nice eye candy for me. It's a win-win. Max lives in the UK. How he became part of our inner circle is a long story. Suffice it to say, as an investment banker, his work with McCobb, the engineering firm where Eric, Matt, and I work, brought him to our New York offices many times. He has one of those personalities that is the complete opposite of most engineers. Outgoing, gregarious, and fun. Yes, I'm admitting we can be boring. The thing that makes Max unique is that he brings out those traits in others. When I was in Washington and Eric was in Indiana working on different projects, Max used our apartment when he'd come to New York for work. Our interests may not all be the same, but we've become friends. While this weekend is about Eric and his impending wedding, Matt, the fourth of our foursome, knew inviting Max would keep the weekend lively. It seems he was right. As I try to smother the alcohol from last night in greasy eggs, potatoes, and thick bagel, I don't have the energy to argue. However, while taking a large gulp of good old black coffee, my deductive reasoning is getting the better of me. You don't expect us to just crash the Saks Fifth Avenue lingerie fashion show, do you? Wouldn't that be fun? You can't be serious. I'm sure there are tickets and shit. They don't just let four men off the street. Max holds up his phone, interrupting my only attempt to change our plans. The screen appears to have some sort of ticketing information. Not crash, the dare. He lowers his voice as his expression explodes with excitement. Is to make contact with one of the models. Eric shakes his head. Are we 12? No, Max says. 12-year-olds don't purchase tickets to see beautiful women walk around in lingerie. No, they sneak onto their father's porn sites, Matt says with a laugh. So we're too sophisticated for that. Besides, we can all afford our own viewing pleasure. This is different. It's unique and unusual. This fashion show only happens twice a year. How many times do you blokes get to watch lovely models parade in front of you? Listen, Eric says, I'm not doing anything to jeopardize my marriage to Cynthia. No one is asking you to, Matt says, joining the persuasion. He and Max have obviously worked the details out amongst themselves. Make contact. That doesn't mean fuck or even touch. He shakes his head with a laugh. Well, contact, no. Talk to, get a phone number, have a conversation. Unlike the show, the dare is not for all of us. One of us needs to be the judge. That, my man, he says to Eric, the groom-to-be, is you. Max, Trevor, and I are the ones who have to do the dare. You choose the one who wins, and the other two pay for this entire weekend, hotel rooms, drinks, and all. I can't help but think that the overall expense would be less if Max had taken me up on the offer to use my apartment for this weekend. Eric laughs. No offense, Max, but I suspect the models aren't your type. Max's cheeks rise. No offense taken. As we said, fucking isn't the object. I've been known to be very debonair, and besides, American women love a man with an accent. I can admire a beautiful woman as much as any one of you. He eyes the table where we're all slightly hungover. Our eyes are undoubtedly bloodshot, and none of us have showered. I know that because we all dragged ourselves out of our rooms with dry, messy hair and the lingering aroma of last night's drinks. Food and coffee were our primary objectives. Better than any of you blokes, actually, Max clarifies. And as I said, it's about contact. The one who gets the most intel, the one who gets the closest wins. He then gets to spend the rest of the weekend at the expense of the other two. We all look at one another and shrug. I'm game, Matt says first. If I'm only the judge, Eric says, I'm in. They all look my direction. I narrow my gaze at Matt and Max. You two were planning this. You know I suck at coming onto women. I should just throw my credit card on the table and call it a day. Hell, Max will pick up a model before I do. Truth is that I have been on a rather dry spell. First, I'm not a ladies' man. One-night stands aren't my thing. With my job, it takes me from place to place for months or even years at a time. I find making commitments difficult. And then there is this one woman. The unexpected surprise is that Eric's impending wedding has put her in the forefront of my mind. I met her at a wedding, well, the night before. It was my brother's wedding, and I'd gotten into town late. I told myself I'd have one drink in the hotel bar to wind down from the flight and let my body adjust to the time difference. With a beer in hand, I made my way out of the loud piano bar and outside to a patio. There she was. Was she beautiful? Without question. Was I attracted? No doubt. Did I do something about it? For one of the first times in my life, I did. I could blame my brother, but he wasn't there. The thing is that I'd spent the entire flight from Washington to Indiana thinking about my brother's wedding. I was and am happy for him. My sister-in-law Kimbra is a great lady. I'd gotten to know her before my job moved me across the country. It's just that there is this brotherly competition. It started innocently enough when, as kids, we wrestled for the controller to our favorite game or the remote to the television. He was always good at football, so I excelled in wrestling. He made good grades. I made better. I can't blame our parents. They didn't pick favorites or make either of us feel less than the other. It's simply part of brothers' DNA, an inherent need to one-up the other. One place I always fell short was on the dating front. I'm not saying I'm not as good-looking. Hell, I know that isn't true. I'm way better-looking than him. Okay, granted, attractiveness is subjective. If I were to truly analyze it, I believe deep down it's a confidence thing. whatever the reason, I couldn't go to his wedding stag. I had everything all planned out. That's what I do. As a matter of fact, it was Eric's fiance, Cynthia, who joined me as my pretend date. And yet, when I walked onto that bar's patio that night in Indianapolis, Indiana, I regretted all my planning. There on the patio of the piano bar was a vision. With long blonde hair and big blue eyes, she should have screamed untouchable to me. She's the type of beauty that honestly scares the shit out of me, but she didn't. I don't know why. I didn't question. It was just something about her, an aura. Hell, I don't know. I just know that throwing caution to the wind, I approached her. We spoke. It's not like I'm the guy on the TV show with the smart friends who becomes mute around women. I can talk. It's that when it's not about work or a project, the conversation feels forced. Nothing about communicating with this woman was forced. We talked and drank. It was later that night when we were coerced into partaking in celebratory shots inside the bar that things got out of hand. I'll never forget her standing there, laughing. She was wearing this blue dress that hugged all the right places and heels that accentuated her shapely legs. She was laughing, and then all at once, her expression changed and, well, the shots didn't stay down. Yes, that's not an attractive scene, but what followed was better. She was so embarrassed by what she'd done that she made us flee the scene. Not leave through the door. No, that would have been too easy. She looked at the mess, looked at me, and yelled, "Run!" We ran. Scaled a fence, wandered through a parking garage, and finally snuck through tunnels. It was the most fun I'd had in years. It was as if instead of an engineer who planned everything in his life, I was spontaneous and free. She did that to me. With her hand in mine, I was someone else, helping her escape while keeping her safe were my only thoughts. From that moment on, I wanted her, all of her. But that night, she wasn't exactly in a position to consent to more than my assistance. It wasn't that she fought me off, but then again, she wasn't coming on to me either. She isn't that type of woman. Her purse and room key were MIA after our little excursion. The hotel refused to provide another key without identification. Taking her to my room was all I could think to do. Once there, she fell sound asleep. Like Sleeping Beauty from the fairy tale, it wasn't until morning when I kissed her forehead that she finally awoke. I'm a 33-year-old man who admittedly still has fantasies. Perhaps with the time I travel and read, you'd think I'd have daydreams. And nightdreams. About a model or an actress, maybe my high school sweetheart or college crush. No. Shayna Price, the beauty who made me feel alive, who woke a part of my soul I didn't know existed, who was within my grasp only to disappear. She's the recurring star in my imagination. She's the one who got away. Even though we never did more than sleep. Yes, the slumber type. Kiss and perhaps a bit of heavy petting. In my mind, as I recall our short secret time, I imagine more. I've pictured her face on the pillow beside mine. I've imagined that kiss I gave her leading to more as I stand facing the shower wall, hot water streaming down and relief at hand. It wasn't only our careers and distance that deterred a relationship, but also our connection. She's my sister-in-law's best friend, her after-college roommate. Shayna and I agreed not to tell Kimber or Duncan about our secret time together. Now sometimes I wonder if it really happened. If it was real. Did she exist, or is she an unobtainable aspiration that will forever remain in my thoughts, but never again in my grasp? I reason that she's real, because after that night, we spoke a few times on the phone. Each time was harder than the last. Yes, pun intended. The distance and inability to see her face to face became too much. With me on the West Coast and her in London, the time difference made even communication difficult. Finally, the calls ceased. I thought to ask Max if he knew Shayna since he lives in London, but what would be the chances? London is immense. An investment banker who's interested in men would have little reason to know or meet a Saks Fifth Avenue lead buyer for the junior line. "Saks?" I say, looking back at my friends. Obviously, their conversation has moved on while I've been reminiscing. "What?" Eric asks. "Did you say this is a Saks Fifth Avenue fashion show?" "Yeah," Matt's eyebrows waggle. "Lingerie line." "Right. Lingerie. Perfect for a bachelor party, but not for seeing the woman I want. Shayna Price oversees Saks's junior line. Right now, she's most likely in London dressing teenagers and deciding on next year's best prom dresses.
Chapter 5. Shayna. My heart beats so rapidly that I fear it may